Hi, I'm Kathleen Gallagher.
Kathleen is the director of the Milwaukee Institute, and I'm Tim Keane.
Tim is founder and director of Golden Angel Investors, and this is How Did You Do That? A show about how and why successful entrepreneurs succeeded.
Our guest today is John Burns, non-executive chairman of Mason Wells Private Equity and chairman of the Milwaukee Institute.
In the spirit of full disclosure, I run the Milwaukee Institute, so John is my chairman. John spent decades building successful companies, his own and others. After running the private equity group at Marshall & Ilsley Bank for 15 years, he managed its spin-out into a new private equity firm. Under John's leadership, Mason Wells raised three committed capital funds, the last reaching $525 million.
Since his retirement, the Mason Wells team under the leadership of Tom Smith has gone on to raise a $615 million fund. As he built Mason Wells, John built a very successful track record, helping grow more than 75 portfolio companies in dozens of industries.
John, welcome to How Did You Do That?
Thank you.
So, John, you know, your vantage point is pretty unique. There are not that many people around here that have your breadth of experience investing in companies, private companies all the time, right, that are pretty variable. And I would think that the question many of our entrepreneur listeners are going to have is, if you're out looking to raise money for a company, what's the first thing you should be aware of in terms of the mind of the guys doing the investing?
Well, I think most investors, whether they're large or small, are looking for a business to invest in. And what that means is that there needs to be a business model. And a business model consists of a product or service and a customer who's willing to pay for it. And there has to be more than one. And hopefully there's more than one product and there's more than one customer. And that creates a business model of repeat business and growth and profit. And that is what defines a business in very simple terms. And too often, entrepreneurs who are seeking money spend all their time talking about the market and the opportunity they see and not enough about how they're going to make money supplying a product or a service to that market.
John, does the size of the business require that managers change the way they run it? You know, is a small business fundamentally different from a large one in the way it's managed?
Yes. Small businesses, particularly entrepreneurial businesses, don't exist when they get started. So you're inventing a lot of the things. Whereas in an established business, there are typically more than one sources of income. There are more than one division. There's more than one division involved in creating the financial performance of the entity. So, yeah, large businesses are more complicated. You typically see more management of people as opposed to management of process, whereas in a small company, you have to invent and manage the process of creating the product or service, which is a different assignment.
So when you think about all the companies you've invested in, go back and tell us about the first one or the second one and what you found compelling and how that worked out.
Well, the first one we did was actually a buyout of GE's dental x-ray business. So that it was about a $4 million segment of GE at the time, and they divested of it because it was too small. And what we did is redesign the product line, move the manufacturing to a lower cost infrastructure from what GE had. And we expanded the product and the services and built it up from $4 million to about $75 million and eventually went public, which was fortunate because you never have to make up for a good start, you know, and it was a very successful deal. Some of the other things that we've worked on that have been interesting, we actually, our first startup was a thing called Office Solutions, a company over in Madison. Entrepreneur's name was Jan Eddy, and it was a desktop word processing that was in the market along with another product called WordPerfect. And eventually those two companies were overrun by Microsoft Word. But in those days, they were some of the early pioneers in the desktop word processing. It was in the early 80s. The interesting thing there was we gave them an investment of $500,000, Roger Ganser and I from Roger's from Madison. And they never put the money to use. 5 years later, they still had the money, and they were $5 million in revenue as opposed to WordPerfect that went during that same period from $4 million to $60 million. That was a real strange investment. We did well on it because we ultimately sold it, but they never really used the money, which was a funny thing.
John, you've talked to me often about technology, and I remember you telling me once about discovering you were 10 and you went to the library and figured out how you could find out about technology.
Well, when I was a kid, long before you were even born, I mean, the only way to learn about technology was to get Popular Science magazine or Popular Mechanics or Scientific American, and you had to send away for things. Today, it's so easy. If I could come back as a much younger man, I would spend my life differently. But it's amazing to me. Just go on the internet and ask it a question. You can get an entire college and postgraduate education on the internet today. What a fortunate thing for young kids. Everywhere, not only just in the States, but in India and in South America and in Africa, they can get an education right on the internet, right off their smartphone. It's unbelievable.
You've always viewed technology as an important component of a company?
Well, I think technology is a growth engine. I mean, if you look at business as a financial enterprise, it hasn't changed much. Accounting is still accounting. And what grows businesses is the evolution of the relationship between the core value that the company delivers to its customer and the application of technology to do that. And so things get better, faster, and cheaper because of technology. So you have to understand technology if you're going to grow a business.
You know, I just have to ask this since you threw it out there. You said if you were a younger man, you'd do things differently. What would you do differently?
I would have gone to San Francisco and started a business. Actually, when I got out of law school, I went to Seattle because I was interested in trying to convince Boeing to build a fast train. I had this design for a fast train called couplers, and the whole idea was that it never stopped. Because if you look at the train industry, the big problem is it stops. I mean, in 1870, you could go from Chicago to San Francisco by train almost as fast as you could get there today by flying because it never stopped. It just got on the rail and went 100 miles an hour for 2 days, a day and a half, 2 days, and it got to San Francisco. Today, it'd take you 3 or 4 days to do that because it stops all the way. On the way. So anyway, I had this thing called couplers, and the idea was the main train would keep going, and then these cars would, when they go by a city, they'd come on and they'd put passengers on and take them off. And there was a local loop that you'd run. But, it didn't work. It's way ahead of its time, so to speak.
This might be a redundant question after that, but you were a commercial banker who was tapped to manage M&I's private equity effort, something you'd never done before. What gave you the confidence to do it?
Well, I think, all entrepreneurially motivated people don't know they can't do it, so that was sort of a given. But I think at the time, Marshall and Ilsley was much more entrepreneurial inside the four walls of the building than people realized. I mean, Dennis Kester was promoting the data center. Jeff Williams was building our international operations. I was setting up the Capital Group. So there was a lot of activity. And Jack Pulicker, who was chairman and CEO at the time, was a bigger risk taker than he was given credit for. In fact, when we started the organization, I told him I thought we should, start our own. I put a plan together and I went in to give it to him. And he asked his secretary to call Walter. And I said, who's Walter? And he just said, wait a minute. He gets Walter on the phone. He hands me the phone. And I said, hello. And I start talking to this guy. And Walter is Walter Aikman. And Walter Aikman, for those who don't know, was one of the founders of the National Venture Capital Association. And Walter tells me, Well, I don't know what Jack has in mind, but if he wants me to do something, I'll be happy to do it because he was one of the early investors in my first fund. So I ended up spending 3 days in Boston with Walter Aikman asking him questions about how to do venture capital. And the next introduction I got was to a guy named Denny Phipps at Bessemer Securities, who was also one of the early venture capital guys. You know, and in those days, I was in the early 80s, 81, 82, and there were only about 20 people in the whole country that did venture capital at that time. And Jack knew two or three of them, so we had a real good start.
So, John, what are some of the common mistakes young entrepreneurs make when they're building their organizations and their management teams?
I see two mistakes almost every time. One is that they spend too much time focusing on the long-term strategy that I call the end game. When they're successful and they're crossing the finish line and they're a, you know, $75 or $100 million revenue company, they're profitable, they're either going public or they're raising more capital to grow even faster. And not enough time on the early startup where they're trying to get the first customer, the second customer, the first $500,000. The small stuff, the small steps, I call it getting out of the starting block. Instead of crossing the finish line, you got to figure out how to get out of the starting block. And so they don't spend enough time thinking about the obstacles and the challenges associated with doing that. And in that regard, they end up wasting money building a large management team. In fact, what I've noticed over the years is almost no matter how much money the investors give a startup, they will spend it in 18 months. And it's almost a rule. If you're investing in early stage companies, the trick is not to give them any more money than they need and to keep them focused on the short term and not worry about the long term. They have to get customers. There are some groups here in town that are starting to do that. I think Joe Kurgis at Generator does a good job of that.
What's the second mistake they make?
Well, I think they try to do too many things at once. They don't focus enough, as I said, on the near term. They waste money on large management teams that aren't necessary. Most small companies can be run by one good person who is on top of all the details. And as they grow, the next step is not to get a five-man management team, but to have one inside person, one outside person, and just split up the duties like that. You can grow to about 20 million, I found, with just an inside-outside person and not a full management team. You don't need a CFO to run a company that's spending $200,000 to $300,000 a year.
So, John, you were a commercial banker at M&I. How did the private equity arm get started at Marshall & Ailesley? Did you start it? Or?
Yes, I did start it, but the way it actually happened was that in the early 80s, there was an effort to form a venture capital fund in which the M&I Bank was asked to invest, and Jack Pulicker called me and said, would you go to a meeting? And I said, about what? And he said, well, just go and you'll see when you get there. So I get to the meeting, and it's a meeting of about 15 people from the Milwaukee financial community, and the conversation was supporting a venture fund that everybody would contribute a certain amount to. And after the meeting, I went back, and Jack asked me what I thought of it, and I said, well, I think it's a good idea, but why don't we do it ourselves? We don't need anybody else to help us invest in small business. And he said, I agree with you. Put together a plan.
So John, in your experience, how do the best entrepreneurs deal with obstacles when they find them?
Good entrepreneurs overcome obstacles either by going around them or going over them. And it always involves some form of invention. We had a company in Ohio, for example, and it involved making composite materials. And they were running into lots of difficulty with the state DNR and the VOCs that they were putting into the atmosphere as part of this new process that they had developed. And the local DNR came in and said, we need to take all the air from your plant and put it through an incinerator. And the design that was being used at the time cost about $10 million to implement, and this small business couldn't possibly do that. So the entrepreneur put together a tiger team to look at the way to try to solve this problem. And what they came up with was a close capture system that took the VOCs right off the press where the item was being made and pulled it into a tube so that it didn't get into the full atmosphere of the plant. And that had several virtues. One, it had a much more concentrated level of the VOC in it so that when you put it into the incinerator, you didn't have to add propane or natural gas to create a fire. It just was concentrated enough already. All you had to do was ignite it. And so the cost of the solution went from $10 million down to $2 million. And that's the sort of thing where, you know, you just have to invent your way around problems and think outside the box, as they say.
John, as an investor in that company, would you say you maybe did a little prodding to be inventive on that solution?
Well, yeah, we were part of the team of people that did it. But at the end of the day, the management has to implement these things. We don't run companies. In fact, I like to say that if I have to manage you, I will fire you.
There you go, Kathleen. Take that to heart.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, John.
Hey, thank you, John, and thanks for all you've done, and we sure appreciate having you here today.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Suggest ideas for future episodes of How Did You Do That at WUWM.com.
And be sure and listen to our other podcasts at the iTunes Store or wherever you get your podcasts.